Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no war, it's fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Vladimir Adis, and welcome to this episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. Some years ago, I want to say the beginning of 2012. No, the end of 2011, actually. You know, I was recording this was my first podcast. You know, I was so rough and edge, you know, around the edges. I didn't have a good concept of what I wanted to talk about. I just, you know, would talk about economics and things that I thought should have been talked about, stuff like that. During the days after Occupy Wall Street was destroyed and shut down across the country, or sort of shut down around the country, it still goes on, ladies and gentlemen. There are still Occupy groups that meet under different names. That spark is still there. But I was enjoying doing the podcast. Not regularly or, you know, altogether, but it was fun. Just because I was contributing a little bit. I had this thought, and I think it's a powerful thought. What if I had been producing the Class War Battlefield podcast during the economic turmoil of 2008? What would I have said? What would I have done? And I really thought about this in a fleeting way. Just, man, it would have been cool to be doing this in 2008, you know, during the financial problems. I thought that. And then, life. Life happened, and I'll be honest, I lost a little bit of the vision as life happened. And I didn't feel the need, I think. Well, I didn't feel the fire. I should say it that way. I didn't feel the fire because of everything that was happening in life, and I had to get away from doing this thing which I loved. Most of us, we can actually remember a time when we used to do something that we loved doing. It really came from a deep place in our soul. And then life happens. You know, we have children. Maybe we meet the person of our dreams. Or so we think they're the person of our dreams. Sometimes they're literally a dream. They're not who we think they are, you know. But other times it's sickness, illness, either yourself or someone else, or promotion at work, which takes up all your energy for 2 or 3 years. You know, it's various things, but we lose that internal spark which originally caused us to want to do whatever it was that we were doing. That happened. And then spark kind of came back in 2015. I lost it again, admittedly. And that was a choice. That I didn't have to lose it, I think, but I did lose it. And then Donald Trump happened. Donald Trump happened. And I remember, you know, I was trying to record new episodes within a month of the election in 2016. And I did. I recorded a couple of episodes which are in the vault and probably will never see the light of day. And then he was elected. And I said to myself, what should I do? And as if my grandmother stood before me and placed her hand upon my head and said, you know what you got to do. Speak. Get back to doing that podcast. And I knew when I started. And I did that for a little bit of time. And then life intervened again. And that happened twice in the last 2 years. Well, year and a half. And that idea, though, which I entertained briefly, of producing the podcast through a time of incredible crises, never quite left me. I was listening to the broadcast the other day. And they were talking about the possible looming constitutional crises that may come up if Donald Trump fires. Now, by the time you guys receive this, this decision will already be made. But if he fires the attorneys general, not the attorneys general, Rosenstein, if he fires him, I think is his name. The person, or not Rosenstein, Rosenstein is the guy who's below him, so I can't remember the guy who's actually going to meet with the president on Thursday. But if he fires him, then Rosenstein, if that is his name, is going to be promoted. And then Rosenstein, who is a very big Trump supporter, is likely to fire the counsel investigating President Trump. And I thought about the usage of these words, constitutional crises. And how, frankly, the Constitution has been in crises for some time. I'm not going to, at least at the outset, try to rehash everything, but when the Republicans refused to even consider Barack Obama's nomination for the Supreme Court, the Constitution was pretty much in crises. They were literally denying what it says in the Constitution is their responsibility. They were saying, we have no allegiance. Now, they all took oaths. All of these Republicans, all of these conservatives took oaths. And they were saying in that moment that those oaths mean nothing. They were saying, this is what, see, I love Brad Friedman because Brad Friedman, he goes by facts a lot. And I get that. But there are things that I feel, that not that I feel, that I know progressives omit from their mind because they don't want to deal with the ramifications of what those actual facts are telling them is actually happening. And this is one of those. These people were making a statement. I don't know if you remember, I think this was about 8 years ago now, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. It was revealed that there was this secret group in Washington, D.C. And I think it was the K Street Lobbyists. There was a book that was actually written about these guys. And it made the rounds for about maybe 3 or 4 months, and then it just disappeared like nobody talked about it. The book was called The Family. This was not the only book to come out like that. There was another one, I have The Family. I actually have The Family, the book The Family. But there was a couple of other books which I kind of kicked myself because I didn't get them. And they were talking about equally secretive groups. This was a group of people, the conservatives. I want to say actually conservatives on both sides of the aisle. Where they were part of this group which would actually take a secret oath to do this secret agenda. This conservative corporate agenda. Or corporate conservative agenda. And they would take this oath to make this their priority, not the Constitution, not the Republic, not the democracy. What you saw in 2016, to me, was that. Nobody seemed to remember that. Even I blocked it out. You know, it wasn't important. But that's what you saw. When you saw a man who Michael Moore now is actually reporting accurately, I think he's done the research to back it up, that when you saw a man that wasn't even running for president dupe the public, dupe the people in power, and rise to the position of being the President of the United States, you saw a constitutional crisis. Why? Why? Because according to the founders, people don't talk about this. According to the founders, the whole reason why the Electoral College was there was to prevent the assumption of power by a demigod or a person unfit to hold the office. And yet it didn't do that. Constitution in crisis, ladies and gentlemen. Now the question is why? Why? Let us be very clear about this. Because here's where it gets scary. We're talking about, right now, the potential of the Democrats riding a wave. The Democrats aren't riding anything. The Democrats better be lucky that their name is attached to what is about to possibly come. And I do believe it's coming. I think I've seen people more animated. They weren't even this animated for 2016. You remember when during the Donald Trump's inauguration? This is the frightening part, because this, I think, is why he was able to take power. During his inauguration, there was this one section, if you did not watch it, I watched part of it, a lot of it, I think all of it, actually, now that I think about it. But there was this one part which it kind of freaked everybody out because they were like, whoa, what is going on here? Where I think it was four military personnel. And I actually talked about this in one of my one of the podcasts I did around that time. Four military personnel came behind him and stood while he was talking. And then disbanded. And like nobody wanted to talk. People made weird comments about it, but then it was gone. But nobody, it's like it never happened. Nobody, well, some people actually did hypothesize. And they had the same hypothesis that I did. That was a symbol. Or a signal stating that the military was behind, or there was factions of the military that was behind Mr. Donald Trump. Why feel this way? Because one thing that most people don't know about the military, everybody, you know, salute the military, salute the military. So the military is not uniform. The military is not uniform. And there are factions in the military. I know this sounds crazy. Because we're told that it's crazy. But there's literally literature on this. There are factions in the military which are dedicated to ideologies of authoritarianism and ideologies that could be very, very, very closely aligned with Nazism if you look at what they truthfully believe. You have a large contingent of white supremacies in the military. Some people would argue that the whole apparatus is just one big tool of white supremacy. I can't argue with it because it's an imperialist endeavor. But beyond that, these people are literally committed white supremacists. You had stories come out during Katrina about white supremacists from the military doing things against the population down there simply because they were black. You have another segment, and this has been well documented, of conservative Christians, who are dominionists, who want to take over the government. They've said it, not me. They want to take over the government and utilize it for authoritarian purposes. They've said it, not me. You have these factions, among others, that exist in the military. And so when I saw that, I saw those factions getting together, but even more so, because what is the military if you ain't got money? Greed, for lack of a better term, is good. No. Greed is horrible. It's one of the reasons. It does something to you when you are that greedy. And when you look at the biggest billionaires in this country, you can say what you want about Warren Buffett. But Warren Buffett is only ringing the alarm. He ain't actually kowtowing his people to make sure that his people do what needs to be done to make sure that the Republic doesn't go down. The people, the most wealthiest people in this country, aren't sacrificing money. They are massing it, and they don't give a damn who gets hurt. What is happening, and should I say what happened in 2016 with Donald Trump, was you had a group of people who publicly said, oh yeah, you know, he's horrible, he's horrible, he's horrible. But not one of them put them, well, not many of them, put their money behind actually defeating him. Forget this nonsense about Hillary Clinton spending $1 billion. You realize most of that money just went into the pockets of the same people who was giving it to her, right? You realize that. You spend $1 billion and what? The tax cut for Donald Trump, from Donald Trump, is going to put $1.5 trillion, some estimates higher, back into their pockets over the next few years. And all you had to do was spend $1 billion to pretend like you cared, like you wanted somebody else. There's a fakerism going on here. We heard, we heard, most of us, because we didn't read about it, but I read about it, some of it. ALEC, which still exists, this fascist organization. And it is a fascist organization. It's an organization of incredible billionaires who are literally writing legislation at this location to funnel to their lackeys in state houses. Notice Republicans have had a 50-state strategy to take back the houses. State houses and federal, in the federal government. They have written legislation that has literally made it into state houses in the federal government. What I'm saying is these people, they feigned like they wanted Donald Trump to lose, but they didn't want him to lose. They were undermining both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders the whole time. Watching this interview that Michael Moore gave, and I'll be honest, I wasn't even going to watch his latest documentary. I really wasn't. Because I know Michael Moore. I mean, I like his stuff. But it's Michael Moore. But then the other day, I watched his interview on Democracy Now! And that's when I said, I need to watch this film. He talked about how Donald Trump didn't even want this. But when he saw the potential and the power, he just went with it. Moreover, something that I realized during 2016, you know, like CNN and other, well, Fox we already knew, but MSNBC would say, well, we put him on because he draws numbers. He draws numbers. He draws numbers. Bullocks. When Bernie Sanders, well, I happen to support it. I did support him. Bernie Sanders would attract 50,000 people. He would have larger crowds than Donald Trump. They wouldn't put him on. In fact, they would downplay his significance. I saw the same thing with the New York Times. The Times want to act like it's innocent and all this. The New York Times did the same thing. You could argue, oh, well, it was because they were supporting Hillary. Hillary was this and Hillary was that. Ladies and gentlemen, wake up. You're looking at the puppets and believing them to be the puppeteer. Stop telling me about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton didn't make $1 billion. She didn't give herself $1 billion. You can act like she could have, but she couldn't have. The people who gave her the money, the people who controlled the access to the media, they are the ones who made Donald Trump. They are the ones who put him in office. Why do you think, and I made this mention before too, why do you think, look, go back and look, YouTube it. This isn't 1990 anymore, man. You have YouTube. Go back and watch her speech from the day after the election. Look at how absolutely shell-shocked she was. Hear me. She was shell-shocked. She was so surprised. She didn't expect that. Oh, she ain't expected it. She had been deceived. And she ain't know what to do.
She didn't. What I'm saying completely, altogether, is that there is this force in this country that is arrived and aligned against anything that is not going to be beneficial to the wealthy. And it has created multiple constitutional crises in just the last 3 years. In just the last 3 years. On kind of a side note, too, with the constitutional crisis that was created in 2016 around the Supreme Court, do you realize, I'm a fan of The Simpsons. I watch The Simpsons. And I wish I knew I was going to talk about this because, you know, a lot of times I come off the top of my head and I do actually have a rough outline of what I'm going to be talking about. But I didn't know I was going to mention this. But there is a prediction about Alito's death. Alito's death. Wow. Alito's death. Wow. That just completely threw me off. Scalia. I went all the way back to the Simpson case, I guess. But Scalia. There is a prediction of his death in The Simpsons. It's suggested in an offhanded remark by Mr. Burns. In this episode where Burns begins to date a woman who's a congresswoman, she, after he breaks her heart, she, who is a liberal, uses public domain to claim his mansion in order to build this pork-fed project. And while they're having an argument about this obvious attempt at getting him back, a wing of his house is destroyed in the background. And he cries out, oh no, the Scalia bedroom or something. And when I watched this, you know, this was before Scalia passed away. I looked at, you know, kind of like leaned to the side and said, wait a minute, what? Come on. They really didn't just do that, did they? Maybe it's a coincidence. But then again, Donald Trump was predicted to be president. That blows my brains away, boy. But, ooh, how'd they even get that right? Anyway, I've been telling a friend of mine recently, you know, he's big into this Russia thing. Russia hacked our democracy. Russia hacked our democracy. And I laughed at him. I said, you know, man, the first thing you do with a crime is you look at who benefits. If you really want to do it correctly, you look at who benefits. And who is benefiting from Donald Trump being where he's at? The wealthy in the United States. Pure and simple. Who has been pushing for the use of these voting machines, which all computer experts, except the ones they pay, not only tell them, but demonstrate. There's a convention, which I don't know if they still do it, but they used to literally practice or see if they can hack into the newer machines every year. It was a convention, I think, held in Las Vegas, where some computer guys would just get together and say, well, let's see if we can really break into these things. And they would break into them. So they had been telling them this for the last 20 years. Your machines are not secure. We can break into them. They're easily hackable. And yet, the wealthy has continued pushing these machines as necessary for democracy in this country. I don't believe for a moment that the Russians hacked. They might have tried. I wouldn't be surprised. Other countries definitely probably tried too, including China. But my money is on the wealthy. The same people who put the system in place are likely the same people to utilize that system, which they know there's weaknesses. In order to put their person in. This was also something the Simpsons joked about. This now brings me to where we're at. And I think you can see why. Because after that history lesson, I have noticed, whereas months ago, all newspaper articles were very much in favor of this, quote, blue wave, and it was almost a lock. It was almost a guarantee. But I've noticed in the past few weeks, you know, this is the end of September coming up, y'all. And when I say end of September, I literally mean end of September. I'm recording this at the beginning of the week. But the 30th is on Sunday. I've noticed some newspaper outlets, and they're large newspapers, who have been downplaying the idea of the blue wave taking back both houses. Now, if you look at, and I mean this, if you look at the numbers, I'll point to Brad Friedman, but there's been other people who have been tracking these numbers, 538.com, tracking the numbers, among other places. Participation at the ground level by those people who classify themselves as progressives or leftists, many of which call themselves democratic socialists now because, you know, it's now in vogue. Most of them have never read a socialist article in or book in their lives. They should, because then they'd really become democratic socialists. But looking at these numbers, it is undoubtedly clear where the actual momentum is and where the force is. People are coming out often in record numbers, particularly for a midterm election. And yet, I have seen articles from the New York Times and from other larger and large outlets, including Washington Post, somewhat downplaying the expectations or trying to tamp down the expectation of this blue wave. I've heard CNN and MSNBC do the same thing, tamp down expectations. And I started noticing this, I want to say in August. Because the pattern was broken. Everyone was talking about this blue wave, this blue wave, this blue wave. And then suddenly, oh wait, the blue wave might not be that big. The blue wave might not be that big. You have seen in some primaries where the force was clearly with leftists, where the corporate Democrat prevailed, sometimes by small margins, sometimes by margins that defy reason. And seeing this, I realized what was happening. the wealthy knows the jig is up. It's over. See, most of us are not following what's actually happening in the world. The U.S. dollar is being ditched. It's being gotten rid of as a means of trading for oil by many countries, including Iran, which is going to hurt the economy. Countries, including the EU, are dramatically angry at the United States for continuously imposing these tariffs. And the U.S. now is bogged down in so many wars that it's just looting itself just to put money into defense contractors. Most of us are too busy to see this, to understand this. So that we fail to see that internally there is this major conflict. The wealthy, who understand they have a ton of money, but they want to have it at the expense of everybody else. And so, I am ready to say it, that these folks have made a decision, if needed. They are going to not allow the people's will to be done. And they're going to not allow the people's will to be done by simply hijacking the electoral process again and making sure that enough seats don't flip in the House so that it remains with the Republicans, so that for the next 2 years, because they can't, if they try to do it in 2020, it'll be too obvious. It'll be too obvious. So they got to do it now, because they can put their media propagandists out there to say, oh, well, young people just didn't come out that much, yada, yada, yada. Just like right now, you know, this whole nonsense of black people not voting for Hillary Clinton is absolute it's ludicrous. They still are pushing that as if it's black folks' fault that they ain't vote for a woman who was in the White House and helped destroy their community. No, black people actually did vote, but many of our people were kept from the polls by the tactics implemented by wealthy white folks. So they are preparing, and I hope, I don't want them to succeed. I don't. But they can have their people go out there. They're preparing right now. They're preparing to snatch it away, because they understand what it will mean. They get it. And this is also why I think what's happening with Kavanaugh is happening. The Democrats, who understand this is it for them, if they don't do something that shows that they are on, they will die. The system will literally kill them off. The people ain't having it no more. Young people, black people, some brown people, because Hispanics are traditionally a conservative bloc in this country. That's why, you know, I look now and I'm watching everything that's happening to the Hispanic community, and I look and I go, y'all really thought y'all were niggas, didn't you? You didn't. That's it. Pure and simple. You didn't think you were niggas. You were thumbing your nose at black people for the last 15 years. Now look at you. Who's your enemy now? Karma has a funny way of getting at you. But you was better than us. Oh, I know. That seems cold. I know that seems cold. But as a young, the same thing with Muslims. As a man once told me, a black man who served in the military, his very clear, conscious mind on all of this, he said, to hell with him. When all this started happening with Donald Trump, he goes, to hell with him. And I was shocked, because I ain't never thought, you know, anything like that. I looked at him, I'm like, what? He goes, for the last 25 years, the 30 years, this man's significantly older than me, he goes, we've been getting our heads stomped in. Where the Hispanics been? Where the Muslims been? Where these Arabs been? They've all been thumbing their nose at us, calling us niggas, calling us criminals, treating us like criminals. And now they're getting it, and they want to start crying? Mm-mm. Y'all take care of that for the next 10 years. Get your head beat in for the next 10 years. We'll be right over here. We'll be right over here. And I was shocked, but it's what it is. So they understand. The Democrats do. They get it. And I know you guys were probably just blown away by that, but it's what it is. This is the reality that I'm dealing with. I'm not sugarcoating it so you can feel good in your liberal nonsense or your progressive nonsense. I'm not. That's it. This is what's happening on the ground, the reality. So, Democrats will die if they don't show at least something. And they know it. Because since many people are throwing around the word democratic socialists, many people are actually starting to research. And then I mentioned this before, and I have to mention it again. The Republicans messed up on that one. I swear to man, and they were saying that they were calling Barack Obama a socialist in 2008, and Google registered a huge spike throughout 2008 into 2009 into 2010. This huge spike of people looking up the word socialist, and so you're seeing basically 8 years of implantation of that idea of socialism, 10 years now, holy wow, where people are now saying, well, what is socialism? Man, it seems to work good here, here, and there. Now, by the way, I do want to point out the whole reason why it can work well in Europe partially is because the United States is an imperial force which keeps Western civilization as a dominant society. Europe doesn't play nice either. But that's for another day. Let me get back on task here because I'm about to wrap this up. The Democratic Party is trying to show itself a little bit so that it aligns with the people. I know Dave Emery, who I listen to and I actually enjoy a lot. He is under this idea that Hillary Clinton is the savior and that Bernie Sanders is the enemy. And he might be right. But I, at least presently, am looking at the Democratic Party and realizing that they have sat idly by and allowed so much to happen. And I think persons like Mr. Emery, who does incredible anti-fascist work, fail to understand how that idleness has really impacted the average person and how what they have turned the Democratic Party into has impacted the average person. The Democratic Party is faking its way right now forward. They're faking it. Can't blame them, but they're faking it. And as we move past the midterms, we're going to see if it works and if the Democrats are really serious. Because I'm going to tell you, if it is revealed, and this is, I'm saying this to progressives, if you do not keep your foot on the throttle, you must have a 10-year plan. If it is revealed, and they believe this, because young people aren't having it anymore, they see the state of the country and the world. If it is revealed that they are just going to go back to business as usual, more of them will be kicked out of the house coming up. And they know it. They know 2020 and 2022 are watershed moments where if the Democrats are not willing to align themselves with these correct principles, they're out. They know it. It's dead. That's why they're doing this. And the sound of the crowd in my ear. So I'm going to wrap it up at this point. You guys have questions, comments, concerns, let me know. This is your brother Brian Mary Deets. Till next time, peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio talk shows and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun.